Good morning, everybody. The Fan Morning Show is brought to you by Guardian Protection, your hometown home and business security company. It is Wednesday. It's a hump day. Thank you for starting your morning with us. And you can always get involved in the show. We'd love to have you on the Fan Hotline, presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. You can tweet us at underscore Adam Crowley, at score and Doran, at callus underscore 33. That's on the Twitter, brought to you by South Hills Kia and Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. And the pre-show wouldn't have been what the pre-show was without you texting in. Brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. People texting in brain freeze. Never a big brain freeze fan.
No, that's rough.
You ever have something go down the wrong pipe too while you're eating or drinking? That stinks.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if it's water or a beverage and it takes forever to go down.
Right.
I hate that.
You're coughing.
Oh, it sucks.
Terrible.
So you can keep texting in minor pains that can become big inconveniences. And, hey, I would imagine for a general manager, it's quite the inconvenience trying to cut that roster down and trying to keep track of all the players around the NFL that suddenly, bang, the market floods with a bunch of talent. And here we have the Steelers' 53-man roster on August 28th, Doran Dickerson, and I'd like to evaluate it with you.
Let's go.
Because I think there are a couple of potentially massive holes. Holes that we have talked about ad nauseum for a long time. Since after the draft, we have looked at this Steelers roster and said, okay, probably pretty thin at slot corner. Definitely thin at wide receiver. However, and maybe going through this will change my mind, I still think from top to bottom, the Steelers have a pretty good roster. I think from top to bottom, this is probably the Steelers' best roster in a long time. Now, you got a tough schedule. It doesn't guarantee you anything, but let's go over this thing. Quarterback, didn't cut anybody. Shocker, shocker, Russ Wilson, Justin Fields, Kyle Allen. I don't know how you can look at it and say it's not significantly better than what it was last year. Starter should be better, backup should be better, and I actually have been impressed by Kyle Allen.
Absolutely. I think that is an upgraded room. But if you do want to say that somebody did get cut, I believe Reese Plumlee did get cut.
Oh, that's true.
But I think he'll be put on the practice squad. I think that he's a nice little player that they're going to want to use eventually in the future, maybe at the end of the season or at one point. I mean, with the kickoff return and everything, he was working at receiver. He was obviously a quarterback in college, worked with the quarterbacks. But I think that this is an upgraded room. And are we the only ones that thought that Kyle Allen did pretty decent this preseason? Like, because I felt like he did all right.
And I
people
do too.
Were like, oh, Kyle, like, get him out of there. What is he doing? He's not making. I was like, this guy came in here and he has no pressure. He's a third quarterback. He's played in the league a few years. I think that he did a pretty decent job.
He's got a career passer rating of 82.2. And I'm just guessing at this, and we don't have to spend too much time on it, but I bet you that's higher than Charlie Batch's career passer rating with the Pittsburgh Steelers. I'm just guessing, but I think it's probably higher than Batch's with the Steelers. So Batch, he played 8 years as backup quarterback, 79 quarterback rating.
Mm.
So Kyle Allen, we've fallen in love or hate, but we've been familiar with the Steelers' backups for years because it was Trubisky, it was Mason Rudolph. Before that, it's Batch, it's Gradkowski. It's a bunch of guys you're familiar with. Kyle Allen, I think, is a good QB3 in this league with a quarterback rating of 82.2. With the Panthers in 2018, two touchdowns, no picks, quarterback rating of 113. In 2019, he threw 17 tutties and 16 interceptions.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I didn't know that until just now either.
Wow.
QB rating of 80 that year, then 99. The following year, the 98, had a not-so-great season in 2022 with the Texans in backup role with two touchdowns, four picks, and a quarterback rating of 60.6. But if that's your QB3, I think you're okay.
So he's in the seventh year?
Been around, man.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, see? Like, that's I think that's fine. I like that room. I do.
And John Reese Plumlee, to your point, look, you don't need a mobile quarterback for your practice squad because you do have Justin Fields. So when you play Lamar Jackson, who better to get you ready than Justin Fields? But I've always liked kind of having a mobile quarterback on the practice squad.
Yes.
And like you said, he's multi-position flexible. And I got to think that them using him repeatedly on the kickoff return might mean they got something up their sleeve for this year.
No doubt.
So there's QB. Running back, no shocks there. Najee Harris, Jaylen Warren, Cordarrelle Patterson. I like it better As we compare it to last year, I like it better than last year because you got your two principal players back and Cordarrelle Patterson. They're going to want to use a lot. And I didn't know what they were getting in him because last season wasn't his best year. The two prior seasons, he was really good. But he showed he's got that burst on that 30-plus yard touchdown run. They're going to use him a lot. And the way that this roster is designed, you've been big on this guy, high on this guy. Yep. The way their roster is designed, I think you can make a reasonable argument that he's one of their better eligible offensive threats going into the year.
Yeah, they're not going to just use him. He's going to be an OW offensive weapon. They're going to use him in multiple areas. I mean, he came into the league as a receiver, so I think people forget that. He was a receiver when he came in, then he got moved to running back. He could play receiver, he could play running back. So if you are looking for another receiver, like the guy can run routes, the guy can get open, he has caught a lot of passes in this league, he's going to be used a lot. And I love that room. They also just added Boston Scott to the practice squad.
Good point.
Who is, he's played a lot of years in this league. I do believe he was, and I don't know if he's still with the Eagles, but he did play for the Eagles for a while and has some yards and some stats that you could look up. But that running back room is shaped up pretty nicely. So we're two for two right now where I'm like, yeah, I really like what's going on with the quarterback in the running back position.
Yeah, and I do think the appropriate way to do it is to compare it to last year. I mean, it's hard to overhaul your roster in one offseason, but they totally overhauled their quarterback room, which rarely, if ever, happens in the NFL where you got three new dudes in there. And you're not going to go from a marginal playoff team and the next year your whole roster is going to be different. And so I think you need to compare it year to year and say, where are they better? Where are they worse? And so that's what we're doing. Boston Scott last year. Yeah. And he played in 15 games for the Philadelphia Eagles. 15 the year before that, 16-16, just added more running back depth.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it means that Jaylen Warren is hurt or anything like that, but it can never hurt to have more depth at the running back position.
And who was the third guy last year? Anthony McFarlane for a little bit. And then they tried, I think, for as a reserve, Connor Hayward was getting some reps at running back. I don't even know if he ever touched the ball, though, running the ball. But this running back room is definitely shaped up, and you got veterans in there, too. So and that's what they're going to want to do. You know, and guys are going to get banged up. Like, it'd be ignorant for us to say that Najee, Jaylen, or even Cordarrelle Patterson won't be banged up at some point this year. So I love the Boston Scott add to the practice squad and maybe elevate him at some point.
Yeah, you got four legitimate running backs now.
Guys that can run the ball, that have run the ball a lot in this league.
All right, we've put it off for too long. Wide receiver. They kept five. George Pickens, Van Jefferson, Calvin Austin, the third, Roman Wilson. We knew they'd keep those guys. Scotty Miller, the fifth wide receiver. And it's just not good enough. It's not close to good enough. And I want to get more into that coming up in the next segment. We can spend some time on that, because it was a sore spot for the last 4 months. I saw Alan Saunders from Pittsburgh Sports Now, Pittsburgh Steelers Now, who does the final word. A very nice man. I like Alan. I like his work.
Yeah.
He tweeted out yesterday, why are people so enraged by the wide receiver depth chart? We knew what it was going to look like. Well, yeah, that's why we're enraged, because we've known for a long time that it was going to be bad. And now it's not cemented as bad, but this is as close to cementing it as bad as you can get, because guess what? You just made your roster cuts. You're 2 weeks out of the season. Like, what you have right now, it's not going to get much better than this unless there's an Ayuk trade, which we'll get to in the next segment, because there is some Adam Schefter reporting on Brandon Ayuk.
Isn't it, and I know we'll dive deeper, like you just said, next, but isn't it wild how if you just transform that room with one guy, how much better that room would look?
Sure.
Like, it doesn't look great right now, but one guy can really transfer that room where you could be like, okay, now this is a room.
Yes.
If you just slide a slot down, everybody slides one slot down, everybody outside of 14, George Pickens, slide the slot down, and you insert right behind or alongside of George Pickens a significant player, that room is really good.
Yeah. Van Jefferson is my three. Roman Wilson, a rookie who you have high hopes for if and when he's healthy, as your four or your slot guy at some point. Scotty Miller, who, if he's in the appropriate role, he's got a ton of speed. Played well with Brady a couple of years ago with 500 yards. Yeah, I agree with that, but they haven't done it.
Yep.
Tight end, Freiermuth, Washington, Michael Pruitt, Connor Hayward. I like the room.
Yes, they're going to use all of them significantly.
Offensive line. Not a lot of shocks here. Dan Moore Jr., Broderick Jones, Troy Faltanu, Isaac Seumalo, James Daniels, Mason McCormick, Spencer Anderson, Zach Frazier, Ryan McCollum. Really no shocks there at all. Though Jerry Dulac in his chat yesterday said that he would expect Dan Moore Jr. to be left tackle and Broderick Jones to be right tackle when the season starts, because Faltanu's just going to take some time working his way back, and you kind of throw him into the fire, baptism by fire, in game one. Said that when Faltanu comes back, the line is going to be Faltanu at right and then Dan Moore Jr. or Broderick Jones at left.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't love that. You're 2 weeks out, and you are talking about potentially a first-round pick that you traded up for last year, not starting, even though he started a bulk of the games down the stretch last season? That's got disaster written all over it. All right, defensive line. They kept pretty much everybody.
Hold up. I love how you just skip over the tight ends. Tight ends there, here's the room. All right, let's go down to the offensive line. Like, we couldn't talk about the tight ends at all and what they could bring to the table. I feel like you did that on purpose. We just totally skipped over the tight ends, just said their names. Okay, this is what we got. All right, offensive line. Look, listen to this. Broderick could not start.
I love the makeup of the tight end room, Doran. Pat Freiermuth, I think, is going to have a breakout season. Darnell Washington, the people mover. Michael Pruitt. Okay, and then Connor Hayward. They got different shapes and sizes. They got a flavor for everybody.
Baskin Robbins.
What are they, 31 flavors?
Something like that.
How many flavors are in Dr. Pepper? They used to brag about that all the time.
Yeah, six?
They said we're not doing that marketing campaign anymore. We're just going to do
23, right?
It might be 23 flavors. They said, screw it, we're going with the Fansville deal. We'll do that. We don't need to tell people what's in it. We're just going to tell people, please drink it and look at our town. Look at what happens when you take Dr. Pepper out of our town. Defensive line. Hayward, Ogunjobi, Benton. Montrevious Adams, Dean Lowry, DeMarvin Leal, Isaiah Loudermilk, Logan Lee. Really no shockers there.
Nope.
Only three backers, edge rushers, TJ Watt, Alex Highsmith, Nick Herbig, but you can really count DeMarvin Leal in that group. Cabali thinks they're going to add an outside linebacker. They did keep Mark Robinson, who by all accounts had a great training camp and I thought looked really good in the final preseason game. I thought there might be a chance they didn't keep him because they had Tyler Matakavich, but I have no problem keeping Mark Robinson around. He could be a special teams demon for you, and if he's learning the position, great. Safety, Minka, Deshaun Elliott, KZ, Killebrew. Jalen Elliott was kind of the surprise.
Yes.
A guy that's bounced around the league, good size, okay? And then corners, they cut one slot guy, and they kept Beanie Bishop, but I would not be shocked if they added there. So there's your roster overview.
The Averett? He
got cut last week.
Oh, I missed that.
Yeah, he got cut last week. So they cut a couple of slot guys. They keep Beanie Bishop. I would feel pretty good if I'm Beanie about starting week one and probably week two. Beyond that, though, I still think they're trying to upgrade at that position.
Mm-hmm.
But on the whole, I think it's a better roster than last year. I think inarguably a better roster than last year, with one significant exception. And we'll get into that coming up next. Someone texted in at 412-928-9370 about Callis's headline and said, hey, Donnie, how about telling us Skeens is pitching today? First of all, Harry did the headline.
Yes.
Second of all, it seems like you already know.
Right, yeah.
Seems like you've been informed. Plus the earlier headlines, I'm just guessing here, Callis, earlier headlines you would do the review of the night before, and then as we get later on, then you start previewing today's action.
Right, I like to give a little flavor. I only have 30 seconds, so.
Yeah. You get 30?
Yeah, Craig said no longer than 30. I mean, some of us like to go longer than 30, but I try to stay as close to 30 as I can.
Who, some of us?
Hold up, was that a shot across the bow?
I don't know.
Who likes to go longer?
Bechtel.
Yeah. Yeah, he does. The first headline of the Starkey Show is like 4.5 minutes.
Right.
He will tell us, Bechtold will, who drove in, what runs, in what inning. He'll basically tell you the whole game again.
He'll tell you who drove there, you know, when they got to the garage.
What kind of car they had.
O'Neill Cruz arrived in a Chevy Impala and then went 3 for 4, hitting a ball 118.9 miles per hour.
He had ranch sunflower seeds as well, and then he threw in a little bit of a double bubble.
There was a wry smile in the dugout as O'Neill Cruz realized there was a throw IKF made that he would have made even better.
Now open.
I don't want to kill Becky too much for the long headline at the start of the show because he could just be covering for his guys not being here on time.
That is very, very true.
He might be extending that thing as long as he can because he knows Zeiss is going to be there at 10:08.
That's very true.
So, shade, yes, perhaps, but also, hey, he could just be covering for his dudes. All right. Adam Schefter yesterday reports that there's no deal close for Brandon Ayuk, that there's been no movement with the 49ers, and that there's been no chatter about moving him to the Steelers or the Commanders. And there are reports that the Commanders have been involved more of late, but nothing imminent. And now we're past roster cutdown day. So it's tough to be super optimistic about that. And the Steelers may well be going into the 2024 season with Pickens, Jefferson, Wilson, Austin III, and Miller. And it's really frustrating, man. It's really frustrating. I think you can make a legitimate argument that the Steelers are better, if not the same, at every position on their roster, except for wide receiver. Like, even corner, I think you can weave an argument where Dante Jackson can be better on the outside than Patrick Peterson was last year. Like, I think you can make that argument, especially with the way Dante Jackson reportedly performed in camp. Slot leaves a lot to be desired, but at some point, you're going to get Cameron Sutton back. And we've seen unheralded players have success in the slot for the Steelers in the past. Mike Hilton comes immediately to mind. But at wide receiver, they were better last year. George Pickens, Deontay Jackson, Johnson, better, obviously, than George Pickens and Van Jefferson. And that this has been going on for 6 months and they have not addressed it is, I think, a dereliction of duty by Omar Khan and the Steelers front office.
Well, I mean, they thought they had a plan and the plan didn't take place. Like, I mean, and maybe they didn't think that they had a plan and they thought that some of those was going to fall in their lap whenever they traded Deontay Johnson. I mean, we've said this 1,000 times. Like, I think they might have messed up in that situation by not waiting and seeing it out, seeing Deontay Johnson with a new quarterback, seeing him with a new receivers coach, seeing him with a new offensive coordinator. You created a hole and didn't fill it. And you thought you were going to fill it, but you thought you were going to fill it alongside of filling another hole with Dante Jackson, getting him back. You put yourself in this situation, and there's nobody else to blame. Like, if they go through this season and the receivers can't get open and it looks rough, and George Pickens is upset because he's getting double covered. I mean, they have nobody else to blame but themselves. They really don't. And you could win with those guys, as we were saying earlier. If those guys are slotted down one slot, if the guys that are on this roster are slotted down one slot, obviously outside of Pickens, if you move everybody down to, if you move Van Jefferson to three, if you move Scotty Miller to, five, if you Calvin Austin at five, and then, you've really created this hole and it's looking like dire straits. It's drying up the potential of you filling that hole.
To the point where I think it's time to panic now.
A little bit.
I think it's time to panic now. When we're talking about on social media yesterday, the discourse being, oh my God, the Steelers missed out on Tim Patrick, who got cut free by the Broncos and signed with the Lions on their practice squad, and people were having a conniption about that, you might not be in a good place with your wide receiver core.
No.
When people are talking about Noah Brown as a potential fix and banging the table for Noah Brown to be in here, you might have a problem at wide receiver. I think Noah Brown's a fine player in this league. He had 500-some yards last year. Yeah, he can be part of your team, and he would probably be an upgrade. He would be an upgrade to this current roster. But when you're talking about Noah Brown and Tim Patrick and Kadarius Toney and Juju Smith-Schuster and Martavis Bryant, who did get cut loose, and you're thinking any and all of those guys would be legitimate upgrades, you might have walked the tightrope too far.
Mm-hmm.
I think it affected their draft plans. when you consider that Alex Highsmith had his contract renegotiated just before the draft, I thought that meant they had something in place. Yeah. I think they thought that they were going to pull the trigger on a deal. And so you go from the draft to now, and you're still waiting on Aiyuk, waiting on Aiyuk, waiting on Aiyuk. We've talked about a staring contest. If it pays off, you win. If not, you missed out on a ton of opportunities, and you screwed the pooch. And I think legitimate quarterback play can lift a wide receiver core, but only so much. You can only do what you can do. Like Russ Wilson 5-10 years ago, okay, give me Van Jefferson.
Yeah.
He'll make something out of him. Now, he'll make him better than Kenny Pickett or Mason Rudolph or Mitch Trubisky would have made him, but you can only polish the you-know-what so much. So, they're in a very bad spot here. Oh, no, Tim Patrick.
Like, what are we doing?
Oh, give me Noah Brown.
What are we doing?
Where's Kadarius Toney? Give him a ring. A malcontent that can't catch the football. You said something about Deontay, too, that we really haven't discussed. Even if you always were going to trade him, you didn't need to trade him when you did.
Yeah, you could have waited.
Yeah. Be patient. There's no need to say, first available moment, let's trade this guy. I'd have to look at roster bonus, things of that nature, but like, you had to do it then. You had to panic trade him. You had to do that. Didn't make much sense at the time. Doesn't make much sense now. Especially when you look back, hindsight being 2020. All right, at 6:50, big time rumors swirling about a very important person in Pittsburgh sports. We'll get to that. Up next, O'Neal Cruz, not playing the field, but has he turned a corner as a hitter?
Swinging a hard ground ball through the right side, base hit. Four hit night for O'Neal Cruz. He'll drive in Nick Gonzalez, and now it's 9-5.
We'll talk about Cruz in a second. Here's a text. The same people saying we were going to be awesome after seeing Kenny do great in the preseason are the same that are saying they're going to suck this year because of a bad preseason. Re-bleeping lax. Look it. That's not what we're doing here.
I don't think we've ever said that they had a bad preseason. Like, there were things that didn't go right. We didn't talk about the preseason games at all, really.
No.
Like,
no, I think we've been very clear about the things that are worth worrying about from the preseason games and the things not worth worrying about from the preseason games.
And we admitted about last year, too, a bunch of times.
Yes.
So we're not going to get fooled.
Right. This was a problem in OTAs. The wide receiver core, I'm saying. Minicamp? Training camp? And the Steelers have acknowledged that by waiting around for Brandon Aiyuk.
Correct.
So we're not panicking any more than the Steelers are panicking about what is not a great wide receiver core. Hope that helps. Now to O'Neal Cruz, who will be the Pirates center fielder in the not-so-distant future. We'll see when that happens. Neil Walker said yesterday on the broadcast, maybe it happens on their road trip. Maybe it happens today. I think it's going to take some time. Yesterday was the first day that they had O'Neal Cruz working out in center field, and they actually had to give him a different glove, which we know a shortstop and infielder is going to need a different glove than an outfielder. I would have thought that they would have one for him.
Already, right?
It looked like he ran out there and then they had to run him out one. So that's going to take some time to get him comfortable. Tarik Brock, who is in charge of getting these fielders ready, said that he looks fluid out there, that he doesn't look like he's thinking too much out there, that day one, early returns, pretty good. They mentioned that on the broadcast yesterday. That's great. Now, a bunch of people breaking down his body language in his interview yesterday. Look, maybe he is annoyed. Maybe he's not. If he is, I think, and this is not a word I used yesterday, he might be embarrassed a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
It's the middle of the season. You've been a shortstop your whole life. You've been the best player on your baseball team probably your entire life. And now, for everyone to see publicly the last 30 or so games, you're going to go out there and for the world to watch play a different position? Yeah, that's tough. You're probably not going to take that totally in stride. But he's laughing in the dugout. It hasn't affected him at the plate where he went 4-for-4 yesterday.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Right?
Like, I mean, if you really want to get a barometer on his mentality, I mean, he could have easily just went up there and just swung at dirt. Could have swung it, you know, just kind of had that lackadaisical attitude that sometimes Rowdy Tellez has, you know, where it's just like, all right, I struck out. Like, no, he didn't. He had four hits last night. in significant hits and in hard hits, and I think one was 113. Like he's locked in for as good as it will be right now. It's gonna suck. It would suck. I mean, anybody that has change,
human nature, man,
it's gonna suck. But he'll get over it, I believe, and he'll figure it out because he could be a star at a different position.
And I think he will be, because at the plate, I think he's rounding into the guy we all expected him to be.
Yes.
So last night, 4-for-4, they lose 9-5 after they lose 18-8. And we could sit here and rake this franchise over the coals for being on pace to probably have a worse record than they did last year. There's a time and a place for that. I'd rather focus on Cruz because I don't want to get too depressed. Since July 1st, he's got an OPS up over 900. He's hitting 271 now on the season. He's been crushing lefties, which to me has been the biggest difference in his game.
Yes.
He has a higher OPS now on the season than Brian Reynolds. His OPS plus is 121. Reynolds is 122. Total bases, O'Neill Cruz has 233. Brian Reynolds is 211. He's quietly become their best hitter.
Mm-hmm.
And if he, going forward, is going to be this 900-plus OPS guy and hit lefties as well as he had the last two-plus months, he is that superstar now.
Yeah.
And I think when we give the obituary on this season, a lot of people might look and say O'Neill Cruz failed because they had to move him off a shortstop. Even if he plays well in center field, you're going to have people who say, well, he didn't play well enough at his position. This is a successful season, I think, for O'Neill Cruz, even though you move him, because he played 9 games last year, and now he's turned himself into probably the best hitter on the team. You really can't ask for more than that at the plate. It would have been a probably not a fair expectation for anybody to say, come in, be a 50 home run guy or something like that, in really what amounts to be his first full season of Major League Baseball. He's been very good at the plate. Very good.
I totally agree. And that could have went away because of so many of the errors and the things that happened. But, you know, he stayed consistent. Like, baseball is a two-sport game. The complete ones are the good ones. The Sotos, the Judges at times. I mean, you look around. I mean, the Alec Bohms, guys of that nature, the Brian Reynolds. Can you play both? And I do believe, I really do. And we'll see how the communication and the learning process goes. That's the one thing that's kind of set to the side. But I do believe for his athletic raw ability that he can be a really good center fielder with the range he has, with the range of running, with the range of catching, and with the range of throwing. Like, everything to me, in my mind, computes to him, yes, that fits a guy like him better than being in a confined space and having to work in that area.
I agree with all of that, man. If he's going to keep hitting this way, and even if he's a league average center fielder, and there's potential for him to be way better than that, but even if he's a league average or slightly below average center fielder, he's going to screw games up less than at shortstop while still hitting the cover off the baseball. You now have a better overall baseball player and a better baseball team.
Right.
So I can't even say it's a failure that you move him off a shortstop. I mean, it fits a massive hole. They were going to have to go out and spend money on center field. You've got a shortstop now in IKF. I think it's the best thing for this baseball team.
I agree.
And you can't minimize how well he's hit lefties of late, too. Lefty relievers, lefty starters. He was terrible against them for a large stretch of this year. Now he's killing them. Still strikes out a lot. He's really turning into the complete package at the plate. All right, coming up next, a really important figure in Pittsburgh sports could be leaving. Who? What's the latest rumor? We get into it when we come back. Oh, the 50-minute mark on the Fan is brought to you by, I don't know why I did that. I went all like Brian McDonough.
Oh, yeah.
That was really odd.
The 50-minute mark on the Fan.
I feel like I got possessed or something.
Uh-oh.
50-minute mark on the Fan, brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, Route 19 in Peters Township, celebrating 50 years in the South Hills. Some local reporting on Heather Like here. Jason Mackey wrote a story in the Post-Gazette. I saw Pittsburgh Sports Now. I think Mike Vakovican covers Pitt for that outlet. Wrote that Northwestern is really interested in Heather Like. And then nationally, Matt Fortuna who is a really well-known national expert who I believe lives in Chicago. He wrote this last night. So this came out last night. I had not seen this until this morning. Northwestern's three athletic director finalists are indeed Villanova AD Mark Jackson, Pitt athletic director Heather Like, and Washington Commanders senior advisor Jason Wright. You also had a writer for the Sun-Times confirm that. So a bunch of reports saying that Heather Like has had some serious conversations with Northwestern. People probably don't give a rip what I have to say about that. I'm sure people care about your thoughts on that.
Well, this is all stemming from, I guess, her not signing a contract extension, and it's not being done, right? I mean, I you know, in these situations, you have a new chancellor, a newish chancellor, who I think has just embarked on her first year of being at the University of Pittsburgh, Joan Gable. Look, I think that people that know business, that understand business, know that whenever there's a new regime and there's a new person that is in control of that regime, they want their own people. I'm not saying anything. I'm not saying that, this is Heather Like's fault. I'm not saying it's Joan Gable's fault. But we just know business. Whenever there's a new head person in football, they want to bring in their coaches. They want to bring in their staff. I don't know if that's the situation going on right now, but usually from what I've been told, that these things do get done fairly quick, fairly and significantly, earlier before the contract is actually up. On the flip side of this, obviously Heather Like has done a fantastic job here at the University of Pittsburgh. She's raised the level of play on different programs outside of football and basketball. She's brought back the script, the colors, everything, and people love her. But if she is the finalist for Northwestern, I ask you, what would you do in a situation like this? Because right now with the landscape of college football and college sports and college athletics, you look at Northwestern, obviously the education is top notch. You're about to build, I think, a $800 million, it'll be done by next year, new stadium for the football team. You're in the Big Ten. You don't have to worry about the super conferences being left out. You ain't getting kicked out. That's a significant opportunity that I think that if you are a Pitt fan or you are a Pitt alum or whatever, that to monitor, because that would be entertaining. If I were Heather, that would be entertaining. That would be a very entertaining situation for me if I was the finalist for Northwestern, because not saying that they have much to offer more than Pitt does, but I've done a lot here at the University of Pittsburgh. I don't know what else there is to accomplish. There probably is a lot of things that she does want to accomplish here. I'm talking about myself. I'm not talking about what she's saying. But you have an opportunity at Northwestern, and you don't have to worry about the whole realignment thing and NIL, and you do have money and the education. It does make some sense.
It's a totally different world than when she took the job.
Yes.
It is a different job now. And so I would frame it this way. If Heather sticks around, good.
Yes.
Good athletic director. Great athletic director. Has really helped with the Olympic sports too. We know about volleyball. Coach there is going to be around though. And so here's what I'll say. If she stays, great. If not, football's in great hands with a head coach that won an ACC championship a couple of years ago and has brought great stability and success to the program. Men's basketball should have made the tournament each of the last 2 years. Really should have been a tournament team last year. A lot of Pitt fans probably view it as a very good basketball team in a program whose arrows pointed up.
On the rise.
He's sticking around. So your foundation is still in place at the two primary sports. And then volleyball with Dan Fisher, that has been a big deal, and they're a national title contender now. He's hanging around. So the three, the two major sports, and then the one that's had the most success, even if she goes, you're still in a good spot. And I think you're in a better spot as an athletic department than you were when she got here.
Yes.
Because she brought stability. And there was some tumult before then. So you hope she stays. If not, you wish her well. And the program's in a really good place, I think. But the landscape of college athletics is just shifting under everybody's feet right now.
Everybody's feet. And, you want to find some type of stability. I would think, if you are a decision maker, I would want to find some type of stability. And that's why, you know, whenever Northwestern, I saw that yesterday, I was like, wow, like that does make some sense. Like if, you know, if I were Heather, like that would make a lot of sense to me because there is a lot of stability there just because they're in the Big Ten and they don't have to worry about getting booted out or they don't have to worry about, hey, knocking on the door, can I come in? Like they're there.
Think about all the lobbying you probably have to do as an athletic director now with all these tectonic plates shifting and not knowing what the state of your conference is going to be. You just don't know. And the unknown to me is the scariest thing.
Yes.
Like I want to know what the hell's going on. I want to know what I'm in for as I make 5-year, 10-year plans in my life. And you can't really do that at a lot of institutions right now. But if you are even Vanderbilt, for God's sake, you're not getting booted. That's not the way this is going. Schools aren't getting kicked out. They're just getting added.
Right.
So Northwestern, weirdly, they shouldn't, but Northwestern in a much better spot from a conference realignment standpoint than a whole bunch of schools out there.
And we talk about, you know, I mean, she came from compliance and that's what, you know, she hangs her hat on. Northwestern is a school that, you know, had a bunch of situations with Fitzgerald, who was their former head coach, that they could probably use some compliance in their athletic department. I don't know how that is now. They probably have patchworked it and try to make it work thus far, but from somebody that came from Ohio State that, you know, hung their hat on compliance and really harps on that here at the University of Pittsburgh, and things have been very smooth. Yeah, if I was Northwestern, that would be a person that I'd be very interested in.
Yeah, and I think that's also a good sign for Pitt that their athletic director is sought after. Like, there's no doubt about that. And I do want to underscore these are just reports.
Right.
A lot of reports from people I trust, but they are, at this point, just reports. All right, coming up next, Bill Cowher gave a reason why he thinks Mike Tomlin did not yet name a starting quarterback. We kicked that around on Monday. We threw some theories out there. Bill Cowher throws a theory at the wall, and we'll let you hear it. We'll react to it when we come back. First, though, fan weather brought to you by Sun Chevrolet. The Chevy Summer Drive continues at Sun Chevrolet. Up to 7,500 in rebates. Terms, conditions at sunchevy.com.